All right, welcome.
Welcome.
Now that we have your attention and everyone's up front, we can get going. Welcome to BRK 3266. This is Cert Prep Exam 7697, Configuring Windows Devices.
My name is Mirko Kohlenberg. I'm a principal consultant from Switzerland and a Microsoft trainer and an MVP.
And my name is Alfred Ojuku. I'm from the New York, New Jersey region with Microsoft. I'm also an MCT like Mirko, and working with services, consulting services. So if you were here about an hour ago, you probably were part of our 7698 session talking about some similar technology. And this is a 697 exam with very similar technology, but a different approach at managing exam. But first, before we dive into the content, a little bit about each of us.
Yeah, so I'm based in Switzerland. I brew my beer by myself and run a user group, by the way. So yeah, that's just me all the time, fast running like Flash, right?
And again, I'm at Microsoft Services. I do a lot of internal work in terms of preparation, and really now starting to branch outside of just Microsoft itself, realizing a lot of people need these exams and helping to sort of promote it. I run a blog that posts information about enterprise mobility, the device pros, focusing on that as a technology. And just a little fun fact, grew up in Hawaii and love to run, enjoy social media, and just, you know, it's kind of what I do. So really hoping you guys get to enjoy us, get to know our personality, understand what we want to cover today so that we run through the 75 minutes with a lot of fun.
Hopefully.
The session objectives, again, is to really just make sure that you're prepared to take the exam 7697. Right across the hall, or to the left of us here, if you walk over, there is a practice lab where you can actually take the measure up exams and prepare yourself. This session is really to provide you with a number of tips, study links, resources, anything you can use to prepare you for the exam. And we're going to break it down as much as possible. We do have a number of slides. Some of the slides will go a little bit quicker through, and others we'll just kind of focus on. The intention is that the slides, once you have them, will be there for you to prepare for the exam, and you can go back and reference any slide you need and brush up on the things you don't know. Typically, these discussions are really about covering all the content, but for you individually, you have to find what you're missing and focus on that. So this is just the layout of what we're going to talk about, the overview. You'll hear us talk about it throughout the session. The exam experience, we'll talk about some of that as we're going through the content as well. And then we'll go right into the content, and any resources we'll show you at the end.
So here are the main things from the website from Microsoft Learning. They are focusing on management, identity, planning, desktop, device deployment stuff. Network configuration, that's the old stuff like DHCP functionality, how is DNS, TCP/IP working and stuff. So that's really the basics. You can have that from older exams like XP time, it's still the same, right? So there are other managing apps, that's a new one with Windows Store for business apps and stuff and sideloading apps. And also updates and recovery with the new possibilities for Windows 10.
So with this exam, you'll see not just three sections. In the last past exam that you guys were, if some of you were attending, there were three sections. This one has nine different sections. So, you know, with that one being the newer exam, they've, rather than trying to break it up into nine different sections, they've shortened it up, putting the same content in those three different areas. But we still cover a majority of the same information with a little bit of a twist there. The beginning really focuses on identity, and I love to do a comparison and contrast between 698 and 697. 697 really is focused on device management as well as identity and just things in it, you know, just managing devices as a whole. And you'll see kind of why we say that. The first piece we start seeing is the cloud. We talked about this in the past, just managing Windows Store and cloud apps, the fact that you have that as part of your platform, and you have to know that you're going to use a Microsoft account to be able to connect to it and make that connection. What do you typically see in this scenario?
So there is also a new option for Windows Store for Business. So I had podcast. The link is there. I uploaded yesterday on YouTube. So all about Windows Store for Business, you want to know, is there placed. But there are new scenarios also with some Project Centennial that you can prepare your bits from an MSI or ICSI file through an app and load it up as a line of business application to the store and deploy it to your environment. So for your mobile device managed clients. So I can show you a little bit about that.
Switch it over. So again, this is just the Windows Store. So what he's going to do is show you sort of what he has.
Yeah, you can see here, Windows Store is the normal, the regular one that you can. Where's my pointer here? So.
Yeah.
So this is the regular one. I'm sorry for that. So, and you have here the company store. So you can just add here a second account, your Life ID or your business account. You have upload your company user details to a tenant in Office 365, Intune, or Azure Active Directory. And then you can connect the Windows Store for Business right through here. And you can see here the applications that your company is deploying for you, payable apps or line of business applications, or also free apps from the store. Right.
The thing that we want to emphasize here is that identity matters in this space. When you're dealing with this exam, they're looking for you to understand that there's an additional accounts that are being used. As Miracle just mentioned, you see that it's not just that these company provision apps are available. It's the fact that now you have to have some additional account that has access to the private store and the business store.
And also some part of this exam are Intune. We come a little bit later to that back. So, but you can also manage policies for your Windows Store for Business that the user only have the tile from your company and hide the others, like the stuff that you can grab with your Life ID. So, and here is the website for Business Store to manage. You just log in or sign up with your tenant information from your Azure Active Directory, and then you can just shop here and manage your applications. It's pretty simple and pretty easy, so if you want to go for more details, have a look on the podcast. So
the podcast tells it all, right?
Yeah, also from a developer perspective, if you invite a developer company that has built your line of business application to upload, what's the process behind the scenes, what he has to do, what mail address you have to receive the mail with the special links and stuff. It's all in there.
So really quick question of the audience. How many people here have taken the 7697 exam? And yeah, don't be afraid to raise your hand. I won't, you know. Good. And how many people have taken an exam in the last 3 months? How about in the last 3 years? Okay, so you guys, some mostly familiar. How many people have never taken an exam? Okay, so
I see some hands twice.
Yeah. the difference here is, remember that a lot of the components within the exam taking experience has changed. You'll see things like hotspots. You'll see things like drag and drop. And just be, you know, for those of you that haven't taken the exam, you need to make sure that you know how to actually click through options or even select a number of options to make up a storyline of what a command would be or what actions you would take on an actual exam. So that's one of the enhancements. But for this component, we're talking about identity. If you want to show them just the Microsoft account with the local account and how that ties in, that might also show you a few things as well.
If you go to the settings, so.
I love your question. I like that you asked that question. And that, you know, like I almost like set you up to ask that question. That was a good one. No, seriously, the question was, does Microsoft have a place that they can actually Take time to practice the exams, prepare that are very similar to what the exam that you'll actually be taking the exam. Here at Ignite, if you walk over, you know, to my left,
it's in room C103.
Yes, C103. They have the measure up exams. Again, they're not the exam questions, but they have very similar type questions with answers that will explain to you why one answer might be correct versus another, and gives you a way to sort of think about why you chose a certain answer and how to logically answer it correctly. When we take Microsoft exams, you're really being tested on technology that exists today. They don't throw any fake technology at you. It's always, every line item is something that you could actually execute or use, right? So the difference is, if you've studied it, if you've used it, if you're familiar with it, it makes it easier for you to be able to select which one of these four are correct. So yes, exam taking is about being able to eliminate the wrong answer. And the reason why we have these sessions so long is because we want to make sure that you are thinking about all the things that could possibly be on the exam so you can eliminate them, right? The people that do well on the exams are able to eliminate the wrong answer and typically find the right one, right? And that's how, sometimes when people walk in and say, I've taken the exam and walked through it, it's because they're good exam takers, they've never taken it. The reason why is because they know all the wrong answers, and therefore the right answer is the one that pops out of them. So hopefully with this session, as we go through it, you start to sort of think about that so that you can prepare for your exams, and you just basically walk in and know the right answers. I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, I was concerned more around the format.
We have some example questions in the slide, so that gives you a little bit a view of.
You mean trying to navigate through the UI, you're asking about the format. Again, the best examples I can give you based on anyone that's interested in preparing for the exam is the Microsoft Virtual Labs. They have the walkthrough of how you can actually do things. The best example is Experience itself, right? And then there's the Measure Up if you have access to it through your company or here. You'll still get the same experience. I don't know if the exact formats are available anywhere outside of in the exam room. And I know exactly what you're asking. So, Mark, okay? Yep. So let's keep going. I just want to show you the identity, linking your domain account with your local account.
So, yeah, I have here my info. So my device is not a domain joint. It's just a MDM in Azure Active Directory joint. So you could just add here your user account information, and the whole identity goes through Azure Active Directory with Windows 10 devices. So
so they will challenge you on understanding how you tie those accounts together. So make sure that you know that it is possible to tie more than one account or to add more than one account to it. Again, this goes into just the, joining a machine to an Active Directory domain, or doing an Azure Active Directory domain join as well. So those options come up. And that kind of dives into some of the stuff that we have in this diagram. Now, this is a very high-level diagram, detailed diagram that kind of talks about how the authentication is happening, what you need to think about when authentication is happening. The couple terms to think about: cloud domain joined and domain joined. So domain joined is just your basic Azure the basic Active Directory, join of a machine. And then the cloud domain join is what Azure Active Directory join is. In the exam, if you see anything that relates to cloud domain join, it's Azure AD join, right? And also know that in Windows 7, we had workplace join, which is a very similar experience of making sure you had access to company resources, Windows 7, Windows 8.1. With Windows 10, the term work accounts became the cool thing to use.
Yeah.
So this exam was written probably a year ago. The term work accounts was the name of it. If you saw what Miracle showed on the screen, it's now called work. I can't remember it, but it has a different name. I think, is it mentioned again?
Work in school,
that's right.
Work in school,
but it means the same thing. So kind of pay attention to what version of Windows 10 was available when the exam was written. Because this exam is about a year old, the term work accounts is what you're looking for. And those are the sort of things that you're going to try to answer. And again, this isn't a trick. This is just how it is, right? And with the Windows as a Service, as things certainly change, we might see it change from work in school to something else. But you'll have to base it on the time that you take the exam.
So the workplace join still available, right, for your bring your own device scenario. So have a look on that too. And also for if you join a device to the Azure Active Directory, so you lose your GPO management. There is a new stuff, had nothing to do with the exam, but have a look on OMA DM. Open Mobile Alliance Device Management. There is an organization, there's a standard for that. Have a look on that. If you're not familiar with them now, do it. It's really interesting stuff there.
Okay, other sections that cover in this first portion is authentication, authorization. Know the difference between what authentication and authorization is. Authentication is being able to allow you in through some sort of multi-factor, who you are, what you know, or what you have. Those are the three form factors that you have to think about. MFA, Microsoft has the Azure Multi-Factor Authentication, where it basically requires you to have some sort of form of authentication, whether it be a PIN, a phone, it can be
mail.
A text, it can be an email. These are all ways that you can actually use it. So make sure you know about multi-factor authentication. Also, be familiar with virtual smart cards, because again, it's the way of getting away from having a physical smart card. The virtual smart card is built into the PC itself and requires a TPM and works with Windows 8. You may get questions around virtual smart cards, so we've listed it out here as another form of authentication. Any questions around authentication, this is where you want to go. We kind of show you a screen of the signing options. If you saw where Mirko was showing you on your machine, you have a number of signing options that show up that are tied into Windows Hello, Windows Passport, and all those authentication authorization components are part of what you'll be looking to understand. As long as you know what that UI looks like and you can select the right scenario for your organization or the right scenario for the case study that you're taking, this portion will be a breeze as well. We also saw sync options show up. Sync options are the ability to control how you're syncing your settings among different systems that you own that are Windows 10. This isn't authentication, but we want to make sure that you saw this as well. The big piece that changes in Windows 10 is Windows Passport and Windows Hello. So you better believe that you might have questions around why Passport and Hello might be required. Quick question to the audience, and just shout it out if you know it. If I don't have a camera that supports the feature where you have to look into the iris, do I still have Windows Hello and Windows Passport? Absolutely.
Yeah, but Windows Hello is not only the iris, it's a face looking the camera. So you have to have an infrared camera and stuff that it looks on your face and that points some points on your face and that makes you unique. So they tested also with twins and it was working all the time. So it's Windows Hello, it's really great feature. You can also prepare them with GPOs, have a look on GPOs about that or OMADM. And really go forward and have a look on Passport and Hello. There are some questions in the test about that.
Yep. And the key around the Passport and Hello is it's the front end to the backwards, the technology in the back end. And they really just want to make sure that you know that Passport and Hello is in the back end. So we've also posted in here some of the supported scenarios in which you'd use Windows Hello and Passport. For example, signing into the Windows Store, phone sign-in, having application or web-based authentication that's required, or even single sign-on. So these are all the reasons why Windows Hello and Passport might be relevant when you're taking the exam. In a case study, you might be asked a question about an organization that's interested in taking advantage of single sign-on or conditional access. And the questions might have something dealing with a number of other technologies. Look for Windows Hello. Look for Windows Passport, because that may be the answer to the question that you're looking for. In the real life scenario, that also might be the answer, but
yeah, of course,
you still have to implement it. The other piece as well in this section is about sideloading apps. We have a list of ways you can actually sideload apps. These are PowerShell commands. Know your PowerShell commands. Again, this is a theme we've seen in the last few years about around exams. PowerShell's the way they test you, making sure that you understand how to write the syntax and use it in a scenario that might deploy a solution like an application that's been built by the business.
Oh, can you go back one? So did that PowerShell command, the APPX package that you are maybe familiar with, OneGet? It's the old one. It's just translated. It's the new one to install apps. So you can also, that's a side note. You can also use it with Chocolaty if you're familiar with them, or other NuGet and stuff to install applications the old way or the new way with the apps or the applications. Do you know the difference between apps and applications?
No, what is the difference between apps and applications?
Apps comes from the store. They are the new universal Windows apps now. And the applications are still the old bit, like MSI or XE. So that's the difference in the name, right? So sideloading apps with add package, you can just download a APPX package. So some applications are also, or apps, available in the store for offline using, and then you can do the old way, or you can also add a repository, like Chocolaty repository. It's an unsecure repository. You can build your own secure repository and stuff, and just install the app with a PowerShell command. So that's really new stuff. So sideloading apps in Windows 10, 1607, there are also app reagent integrated, but that's not part of the of that exam, so maybe they, that questions are coming later. And also for UEV, we want to talk also a little bit later about that.
We also mentioned just the workplace join options, just making sure you know what those are. This is for the older technologies, again, the difference between domain join versus workplace join. This really applies more to Windows 8, but you still will be tested against this, specifically when we talk about the older model of the Windows 10 mobile devices. We had this before around the virtual smart cards. We wanted to put it in here. Knowing how to create a virtual smart card, the fact that you have to have a TPM in place to get that virtual smart card to work, and understanding how to use it in a command line. We've listed it out here as well.
Oh, I have an additional info. You didn't need a physical TPM chip. If you have a UEFI device, there is a TPM chip
built into it,
virtualized, right?
Yep.
So
that's real life answers.
Yeah.
Okay, question. First question. You're trying to use the ADAP X provision package PowerShell command. The main app is saved in C AppX. What command should be used to provision the package? Again, this is an example of what type of question you're going to ask, kind of like what the gentleman mentioned. A, you know, there it is. I'm not going to read the whole thing. B, add provision package path CAPX. C, add provision package online folder item path APX. And D. How many people think it's A? B? APX, okay. And how many people think it's C? Okay, and D, how many people think it's D?
So, wait, before you get the answer, I get you an example. Switch, please.
Okay.
So, go to PowerShell. With the command, we have get help add APPX provisioning package examples. And here you go, the answer.
So, the moral of the story is use PowerShell. You'll get your answers. So if you look at this, the answer is D, as you can see. Again, there's nothing complicated. What they try to do is they ask you the question in the context of how you would actually use it. So you're looking for something that has the same, you know, build and the same build in terms of a command line that you would see. This example shows you being able to add a package that's offline, specifying the path in which the application is located, as well as the license path in which that's associated with the application that you're actually publishing as well. Mm-hmm. So you need both of those to be able to publish a package. And that's why we have this one as the answer that you're looking for.
Yeah, if you go to the Windows Store for Business or Windows Store and download an app that is offline available, just have a look. There is an APPX bundle in it, and there are all the files in with the licensing XML file and stuff. So you have the whole thing to load to your side loading to your Windows 10 device. So.
Planning desktop and device managed deployment also becomes important because we focus on the user data. We also focus on Hyper-V, and then configuring mobile options, which Mirko will show you a little bit later, and then securing the mobile devices. What's security on the mobile devices? Now, again, this is just a section header, so it tells you the details of what we'll cover. Many of you may have seen this before. This is just USMT. It's still relevant in this exam. You still have to know USMT. You have to know what scan state is, you have to know what load state is, and how you actually take a file from an existing system, store it in a location, use load state to copy it back once the machine is identified or targeted as the target location, and allow it to basically use the XML to read back and put the data back. So the USMT process is still there, and once those settings are there, user has to log off and log back on for the settings to take place.
So the user state migration tool, someone of you are familiar with them or not?
How many people use the USMT? A couple of you guys? A lot of you guys.
Yeah. And then you know where is the place to get the app, like the scan state and the load state. It's in the ADK, in the assignment and deployment kit. Assessment and deployment kit.
They're changing the name all the time.
Right? Yeah. And there is also for every Windows 10 version a new ADK version available. So you get all the time the newest USMT bits. Just use them and you can manage the profiles from older Windows 10 or Windows 7 versions to the newest version.
Again, this is an example of us giving you a reminder. If you don't know scan state, load state, here are the commands. Just run it a couple times, get used to what it's actually doing. Know the difference between MIG docs, MIG apps, and MIG users. MIG apps captures application settings. MIG user captures the profile, the user profile settings that are on the machine, and the MIG docs captures documents in the documents folder. All of them can be, you can use some of them in conjunction, but they're all available for load state to put the data back to that system. The other thing you want to know about is Hyper-V. In the Windows 10 client Hyper-V and how to enable that feature. They might ask you questions on what you need to do to enable Hyper-V, and this kind of shows you the process. The gentleman asked earlier about being able to kind of click through and see. This is an example of where they would actually ask you to go to Start and go to Programming Features, click on Turn Windows Feature On, and then select Hyper-V and then reboot the box. If you don't select all four of those options, you get the whole question wrong. So I know that sounds sad, huh?
There are more easier ways, by the way. Use DISM with add package and stuff and PowerShell. It's much more easier, but that's the way to go in exam.
Also, nested VMs are something that's pretty cool. It's available in Windows 10, the latest version of Windows 10. I'm sure the next question for some of you is, what are nested VMs? And nested VMs, if you haven't heard of them yet, are running a VM in a Hyper-V VM in a VM. These are good for if you are a hoster and you're trying to help somebody have labs in a hosted environment.
Also to prepare a class. So yeah. I just have to build one VM with different VMs in it and just copy the only one VM to every computer, just run it, and all the labs are inside, so that's pretty cool.
And we run a lot of Windows 10 mobile emulator labs, and before, because the hardware is built on like VMware, we couldn't actually emulate the VM. Now with nested VMs, we just have the Hyper-V server available, the Windows server available in a virtual machine, and we can launch the Hyper-V console and have the Windows 10 mobile running in the remote desktop session. So it's a really good feature, nested VMs, look it up. I don't know if it's in the current exam. If they do some iterations, they might add some exam questions to that.
So in the Hyper-V also, the virtual switches. So the virtual switches, like the physical network adapter, the virtual network adapter, and the virtual switch, there are some different kind of virtual virtual switches available. One is a private, one is an internal, and one is also an external. So that make have a look on that. What's the difference between them? What's the private? The private is just for VMs. They are have a closed network switch. They can't communicate through the host, to the local host, or through the external network adapter. The internal can talk about the virtual machines and the host, and the external goes through to the external adapter, like Wi-Fi adapter or Ethernet adapter, and give you internet connect or something.
Do you have a play button? Is that a play? Can I actually play it? Let me check.
Play.
All right, now I'm curious. I'm just, that doesn't play. Ugh, it doesn't play. I got all excited. I'm like, yes. All right, so enterprise data protection is another component that actually we talk about in this exam. Anybody know the new name for enterprise data protection? Anybody? Windows Information Protection, so WIP. I think I'm saying it right. Yeah, WIP. Yeah. So EDP is now WIP, but for the exam, you still need to know enterprise data protection and what it is. We've listed out what it is, you know, basically the ability to protect data as you're switching between, you know, personal container and work container, and being able to protect that information. We see that on the Windows 10 mobile platform now, and it was also sort of developed for the Windows 10 desktop itself. So know the benefits, know the prerequisites, any enterprise scenarios that you might run into using the EDP as a platform. But keep in mind, for the exam, it is EDP, but in real life, right?
In the new version.
Yeah, in new version, you'll have Windows Information Protection, and it essentially has a lot of the same bells and whistles with a lot of upgrades, a lot more granularity fit into it. Now, this is more around disk management and data management. So you also see file and disk encryption. And so we bring this up because we want you to start thinking about what options am I going to select. If they're asking me about having to protect data or files on a system, do I use BitLocker? Do I use encryption? Do I use EDP? And knowing the difference. File and disk encryption, or EFS itself, is a way of providing some sort of cryptographic protection on an individual file or a specific file that you have running. And you can set it to a whole set of files or hosts on the machine. As you can see with Workplace Join, when you actually Workplace Join a system and you have access to that file server turns green because of the EFS that's built into it. And therefore, it's encrypted. So that may be a way to protect the files, but maybe not the whole operating system, just those files at that specific location. It does require certificates, and you know, you can use a recovery agent if you have any issues getting those files back. Also know that BitLocker is available as well. It has a number of new features that are built into it, and that's the portion of it that this is a disk encryption component. So we put them both on here to think about when would I use file encryption, when would I use disk encryption, and what's the technology that's built into it.
So to manage also the BitLocker, you can manage that through GPOs, so that's pretty simple. Also make sure what's about the security key or recovery key for the user, that you can store that in MBAM or in the Active Directory environment. So.
Okay, I'm going to skip that because there's nothing to show.
Yeah.
But wanted to make sure, you know, the BitLocker Network Unlock is another feature. No BitLocker Network Unlock, basically provides you the ability to unlock your OS volume at during a system reboot when you're connected to a specific corporate network. So that's a feature that they start asking you about. Understand that you have specific hardware requirements tied to that. For example, UEFI, DHCP settings configured correctly. All those are part of being able to unlock your BitLocker from that system itself.
Here are some side notes.
I like the side notes.
If you use UEFI, who of you uses UEFI now?
I hope everybody raises.
Oh, great.
Who still uses BIOS? There you go.
Okay, who are using UEFI with Secure Boot?
No, seriously, who's on Windows 98? I really want to. Anybody have Windows 98? Just. The legacy app?
Yeah, I have legacy on NT4.
Oh, wow, well, that's close enough, too.
It's the same age, right? So, yeah, you have to prepare your DHCP settings and stuff, and also prepare your WDS, Windows Deployment Service for UEFI with BitLocker. So the problem is I have a real worst scenario. If you have to press a key to get in the PIN to boot up the system, you have to press the key, that I'm not sure it was F9, you have to press it physically. So you can't use any TeamViewer or out-of-band management and stuff. It's not working. So be careful with that settings. If you have a huge environment and you have to go to every computer to press F9 just to get like OS deployment or wake it up in the night to make software deployment overnight or whatever.
Okay, and we also mentioned the EFS recovery agents, basically a user who has the ability to unlock an encrypted file. For example, if somebody leaves an organization and they have some sort of files that are encrypted, you can have a user recovery agent that allows you to go in and unlock those encrypted files. So recovery agents still matter. Again, we're showing you this because this may be a number of those options that you need to eliminate. Or it might be the answer to one of those questions that you're looking for. Knowing what it does is more important in this exam, and knowing how to either eliminate it or select it is also important. So this is what an EFS recovery agent is, and that's how it works. It still requires Enterprise CA. It doesn't require it. If the Enterprise CA is not available, it will generate its own certificate to users and make that available to them for that account itself. Okay, question two, planning for desktop and deployment. You have been asked to set up an automated hands-free installation of Windows 10 and are advised that a provisioning tool should be used to support ZTI. Which tool would be the most helpful for this task? Ironically, we haven't talked about provisioning tools, but we're still gonna ask you guys the question. Okay.
Do you are familiar with ZTI? Zero touch installation, thank you.
We call it ZTI here.
ZTI, okay.
ZTI is like...
ZTI, what? Yeah. You know, I'm from overseas.
I know, right? I'm just kidding.
So what tool you have to use? So you can use A, Windows Assessment Console from the Windows Assessment
Anybody who
Toolkit.
Thinks it's A? Okay.
Okay. Windows System Imaging Manager, B.
Who thinks it's WSIM? Okay.
Okay. Deployment Imaging Servicing and Management, DISM.
DISM,
C.
Anybody? So you guys know your tools, huh?
D, Windows Deployment Services, WDS.
Okay. You're good, yeah. I got you. I knew you.
maybe you can set both.
How many people think it's E?
E, System Center Configuration.
Great job. Yeah, okay, make it simple.
Yeah.
Yeah. I knew what you were thinking. I was on the same page, too. Oh, good comeback. No.
So the main point in this question is zero touch and hands-free installation of Windows 10. So that's only possible with Config Manager.
Exactly.
Comes out of the box. So you can do it also with MDT or DISM, but you have to do a lot of work more. So,
that's actually a good point that Miracle makes. You might see an exam question that has multiple correct answers. They want the one that's more correct. I see a lot of people sometimes on different forums arguing, this is right and that's right. Well, both answers might be right, but look at the scenario again and find out which one's more correct, or eliminate something about that question that doesn't make sense.
Okay? Yeah, but more correct means what's out of the box more correct, right?
Yes. So. Yes. Not more correct is that I would actually implement with the client. Okay, the next section actually goes into Intune. We talk about supporting mobile devices.
Question,
sorry. So you said you took a security exam and they asked the question around the perfect right answer that's not there. Versus the one that is do you have to choose the best answer of what's available? That's the question. And I would say yes. I mean, because let's say It all depends on the scenario, right? You have to look at the scenario they present to you. And the way I see it typically is they're going to present a scenario the customer has. You can go back and reference it. And out of those scenarios, you have to pick the one that is the most correct. I don't recall seeing a question where, well, tell me which one is incorrect. I think that's kind of what you're asking, right?
Not really.
I see what you're saying. The perfect answer is not there. That's actually a good point. So you're saying they picked the best answer, but it was only the best answer. So it's something that might not be there. And that really it comes from us as a community having real world experience. For example, you might have a number of options that you typically we use SCCM to do, but the only option you have is WDS. Well, WDS is the answer. You don't have a choice, right? So by elimination, you're going to select WDS. So yes, you do have those sort of scenarios. And what that means is, Mirko mentioned, you have to take your real-world hat off and look at the exam and what they're testing you for.
It's like what's description on TechNet articles. Mm-hmm. What's their scenarios, right?
Yeah. It's the basic scenario, because they're really just testing you on how do you understand the basic technology.
So the part that threw me is the scenario that they gave couldn't actually happen.
He said that the part that threw him is that the scenario they gave, I hadn't done it for the recording, it couldn't actually happen. And I've seen that a number of times, but because TechNet said so, it technically would be the answer. I think we're seeing less and less of that. I keep pushing them to start up. I mentioned this a couple times ago. It's called certification as a service, so that as things change, they just update the exam. And they're starting to do a little bit of that, but not enough, as much as you said, where people can actually say, well, this question sucks, get rid of it. but we're seeing more of that coming. But let's keep going. This section covers Intune, and we'll have some demos for you. But it also covers other things, like some of the other components, and I'll show you some of that now. So work folders, we mentioned that before. Work folders still matter in this space, where you can set up a work folder for your organization. We gave a path of where those work folders would actually, where you could actually configure it through the group policy, because that's a setting that you can still control, and it requires Windows Server 2012. So we kind of gave you the requirements for setting up work folders. It hasn't gone away. It still works on Windows 8 and Windows 10. And Windows 7 also, and it's available for you so that you can have a device that's not joined to the organization, but still have access to work folders on that system. And this is, you may not be asked about setting up the infrastructure, but this is more of a diagram that talks about what a process looks like. They may ask you questions around how to logically do something. So this is an example of, one client resolves the work folder, and it goes to a DNS server, looks for a sync server. The client sends a discovery request to that server. It retrieves this information from the user property. The client receives it and stores it in a sync location for future sync sessions, and then it's pointed to the designated server. The example is, sometimes they ask you information and they put it in different orders. And your job is to select them from the left side and put them on the right side and put them in the exact order. If you don't get all of that right, you do not get partial credit. You get no credit. So again, important to understand what the steps are. It gets even more difficult in developer exams. Now, I've taken like 36 plus exams with MCPs. And the developer ones definitely have that sort of, you better get it right or else. And we're starting to see that now in some of the MCSA exams, typically this one and some others. Okay, so coming up,
so
we're going to jump over.
We have also a lot of questions to manage devices with Intune, agentless or with agent. So here, the scenario, you get familiar with that, with Andis and CA and Azure Active Directory, sync and stuff. Just go and create your Windows Microsoft Intune trial. You get a 30-day trial version and just play with them. I show you a little bit about that.
There we go.
Yep. So if you have your trial version, you get some information like a dashboard. You have groups to manage, users and computers. The users comes from the site from the Azure Active Directory. You can also play with the mobile devices that are joined in Azure Active Directory. They are enrolled as a device in Azure Active Directory. Then you can see all the devices here as so that's from our company live data. So you can see there are mobile, personal owned, what that means, corporate owned devices. You have the version, what you can see, have a look on what all informations are available here. Then the next step is to create policy files. So configuration policies. When you add here, you have some different configuration policies for Android, iOS, Mac OS X, Windows, that are the most important for the exam here. So like edition upgrade and stuff, or you can also manage clients or policies, VPN, Wi-Fi information, or the OMA
so
PM
go,
settings.
Go into one of those settings. So I want to just show you really quickly.
I will show you the best, the funniest thing. To exclude from your Windows Store for Business the live account section that the user only have the business account section. So that's a OMA DM setting. You just edit them. So, and here are
example.
Edit. So now you can see it here. There are the OMA URI. It's a point user vendor, MSFT, policy config, application management, require private, and the value is one. So if you deploy that policy to the devices, they just want to show up the store for business and the other private stuff is go on. That's just an example to the example before. So go ahead and play with them. Also compliance settings. Here you have like iOS, Windows, or whatever. The main questions in the exam is most of the time Windows 10 or Windows 10 Mobile. So then you can also, with admin section, you have settings like for conditional access for your SharePoint or Exchange Online. You have service administrators like rule-based. You have TeamViewer integration that's new.
Yes, the TeamViewer is fairly new. I'll be surprised if it's in the exam. So not that I know.
Then you have also device enrollment managers that not everybody can enroll his phone to get access to the mail and stuff. You have here the multi-factor authentication that you can implement. You have certification connector stuff. You have the reports. There are also some questions about reports, what the information you can get or what report you have to open to get information like blah, blah, blah. You have also the application management. So for mobile devices, age and less, you can manage them through the MDM channel. So you can also implement the Windows Store for Business to Intune. There are no questions about that at the moment. That's really new. Or Apple volume purchasing applications, that's also new here. And you can manage your normal apps, like if you have an agent, an Intune agent installed on your client, then you can upload here ICSI files or MSI files with the parameters for unattended installation. Just load that information of the application up to Intune and deploy them to a group, to a device group or a user group. You have the possibility to make that application available or required. So, so here is a little wizard about that.
It takes a second, but once it comes up, it's basically your location and where you can actually specify application. Yeah, it's in German, so lucky.
It's in German, sorry. So, but you can interpret Windows installer, ICSI, or MSI,
I can read
right?
that. That's not German. Software installation program.
Software installation program, yeah. So
German?
That's Swiss German. So we're half English, half Swiss, half German now. But we have the better chocolate, so. And the nice watches, right? So here you can also add some external links or iOS applications. External links means links from Google Play Store or iOS X Store or from Windows Store. And here the MSI, you can also add APPX applications and deliver it that way without the PowerShell commands. So it's pretty simple. Or you can also use MDM MSI, that's the last one, Windows installer. So agentless MSI installation, but that has a limitation. So if the MSI runs other processes, other programs outside, or you have an open MSI with a bin folder or with the update folder, that's not possible to run through the MDM channel. Huh? So go ahead, play with them. You have a 30-day trial ready. Use it. So you can do it again and again.
Excellent. So, and again, there's a lot that you can pick up just from the console itself. This section covers device enrollment. What do I need to do to enroll a device? And the device management prerequisites, like you said, compliance, the company portal settings, all the different settings that you'd actually see. They're right there in the console. The quickest way to get this set up is you go to aka.ms/ems-trial, and it will allow you to get a license. It'll allow you, you know, everything from Intune to Office 365 to Azure for a 30-day trial with whatever domain you want. And at that point, you get the same thing he has. You get to test it out with the account. You don't even need your personal domain. You can have a Microsoft-hosted domain as well. And that's really what they're testing you about. The other piece they test you on is planning for the company portal app. In other words, making sure you have the ability to deploy the company portal app on any device. Again, the company portal app is only available on Android, iOS, or Windows devices. And it also provides you the ability to see applications that are published by your organization for you to download. There are different ways to publish applications. Some of them are required and it gets pushed to the device, and others are available and made available for you to find in the application library on the company portal. You can also customize the company portal with different looks, with support information. All of that's possible. So they may test you on that. Make sure that you know that it's available on all of those platforms, and they probably don't care what it looks like. I gave you what it looks like. That's what it is. Download the company portal and move forward.
It's free in every store.
Yep. Well, yeah, it is free. Types of policies. I think you mentioned this. You talked about it a little bit. Compliance versus configuration policies. Again, compliance policies are things that check to see that you are in compliant with the organization. Whether you have a device that's jailbroken, it will detect that it's jailbroken and force you to... it will basically make it out of compliance, therefore you don't have access to the resources. Configuration policies are things that set up your system and actually control what it looks like so that you have the setting, but compliance controls the ever-changing nature of the system. As you mentioned, conditional access is really to control who has access to resources. For example, Exchange and SharePoint and Skype for Business, and I believe the Dynamic CRM is also in there. All it's doing is saying, the device has to be registered to your Azure Active Directory. You have to have it enrolled in Intune as an MDM solution. And thirdly, you have to be in compliance with whatever rule your administrator sets. So those three things are typically what drive conditional access. A lot of people get confused around conditional access. So if you do get a question around that, those are the first three things you want to think about: compliance, Intune, and Azure AD join.
There is one more side note.
There's always a side note.
There is coming a lot of new stuff with that portal. So Microsoft announced that this week, that it moves that portal. It's still Silverlight based on Internet Explorer. And they move it to the new Azure portal with the flipping to the...
How many people seen the new portal?
The right side.
Azure Active. You can raise your hands, okay.
Azure Active
I won't say anything. It's pretty cool. So what it is, and just to echo what Americal said, what you saw was the existing Intune console. What you knew about Intune 2 or 3 years ago is not what it is now. I'm just making it clear for everybody. Every 2 years, it's changing. So now what's happening is they're integrating it into Azure. And again, I don't know if this is going to be on the exam, but that new portal is going to be in Azure. And it's going to have the same bells and whistles that you see in the Azure console, so you can actually control and manage applications as well as applications without enrolling them into Intune.
Yeah, so we can see here, I have it integrated. Where is the Intune?
Just do a search.
Do a search. search. So here are the Intune. So you can see here the mobile application management stack is implemented in the new portal, so the rest is coming. And also there are some new stuff available for Android devices to manage, so like rooted devices or something. It's still a pain at the moment to manage them, but it's from real world. iOS and Windows are really great to manage. So you can see here some policies for conditional access stuff.
So conditional access is now will also be available for both applications that are managed within Intune and as well as applications that aren't enrolled in Intune devices. So that's something that we'll see. Again, we're kind of giving you a little bit of the best of both, which is here's what's on the exam, here's what's coming. And then, as he's showing here, the number of target apps that are have basically been made, have been app-wrapped so that they are aware of the configurations for a man without enrollment. You can basically put policies on this. What happens is if a user downloads Outlook or Word or Excel to their device, and they try to log on with your company ID, it will pull down a set of policies that says what he or she can do on that specific device. So basically, I am limiting them to be able to copy data out of Word into any other location. I can only look at that information, or I can't save it, depending on what policies you set. Or the disk has to be encrypted, or there has to be a PIN. All these policies are decisions that are made with your IT, and you no longer have to just basically enroll into Intune. So good information to know. I don't know if it's in the exam, but if it is, there you go.
A little piece of them, so
yeah. So new apps are showing up every day. Mm-hmm. So let's keep going for time's sake.
Yeah.
So we covered the client using Intune policies.
You can click
so nothing
through,
there.
I show that.
Yeah, we talked about application deployment continued. And then here's a question. Now this is a hotspot example. Now this is where you actually have to select the right way to do this. And hopefully you guys have been paying attention. Walk through the process of creating a policy to be deployed to all managed Windows mobile devices in Contoso.com. So I'll just walk through it. I mean, I'm not going to be like, what do you do, right? Here's the main interface. I'm going to go to policies, right? I'm going to click on, create a new policy. Then I'm going to go down and select Windows Custom Policy, Windows 10. I need to click Create Policy, and that's it. That's all. But simple process, right? But knowing that in itself makes your life easier because you basically read, I'm setting a generic policy to a Windows 10 device. Now you can see there are a number of other options available, but the one that made the most sense was the Windows Custom Policy, because that's the one that basically generally gives you what you're looking for. If you went with the Windows Phone, it would only apply to Windows Phone devices and not, desktop devices.
Why wouldn't it be the
Windows 10 Mobile?
Oh, the configuration policy is like a template. But if you create your custom policy, you can do anything you like.
So the configuration, the question was, why isn't it the one right above it, Windows configuration policy? When you pull up the Windows configuration policy, it allows you to select, you build your own, OMADURI commands, OMADM commands in there. So it's even more customizable than you really need. This one gives you a generic list of custom policies that you can actually select. And in the back of that, where you and I don't see, it's doing all the configuration for you. So good question, though. Okay, next section is configuring network IP settings, network settings, maintaining network security. Now, we've talked about this before. Some of this, if you already know, you're very strong on it. It's a breeze. But they still question you on it. So things like knowing the well-known ports, we've listed a number of them out there. You know, FTP is 21, DNS is 53. Know your ports. Know how they fit into the framework of the network itself. Know where they sit in the layers. Now, they might not ask you about all of that, but just knowing 80 and 443 and 53, all of those might help you in terms of determining where what type of traffic you need to block on a firewall or open up on a firewall. What is it?
21.
Yeah, NDA. Just in case. He was on the practice. No. And so we listed out the terminology as well. Know the terminology: automatic private IP addressing, a PIPA address, default gateway, DHCP. We've shortened them. They don't expect you to know what the acronyms stand for, but you also know when you need one versus the other, because they might ask you questions around, you know, change the DHCP scope or change the PIPA address. If you don't know the difference, then it makes the question a little bit tougher.
Yeah. And PowerShell. You have to know for every command in command line prompt, the PowerShell command. So there are some questions what you can do now with PowerShell, like the old command net use or something. Easy is new SMB mapping command line. So do a refresh about that. So PowerShell is coming more and more also to that question for Windows 10.
Do they allow the PowerShell aliases?
No.
The question was, do they allow the PowerShell aliases? And yeah, I would guess not.
Just a calculator.
If you can do it on the calculator, then, you know, hats off.
Well, like in PowerShell, you can actually use the word thing, but it's an alias.
Yes.
Yes. No, but they're really just looking to know that you know the PowerShell command. So, good question, though. Okay, so also in the new app, you manage Wi-Fi settings, you have configure network settings. Just make sure that you know that you can actually control those Wi-Fi settings. I've given you sort of a steps to managing a preferred network, for example. They might ask you something like this, and you have to be able to walk through. One thing that I want to mention is opening the settings app, looking for things that are talking about what you would do in the new Windows 10. If you see something that says open the control panel, and you see one that says open settings app, I'm going to select open settings app. Again, this is not always just about knowing the technology. It's about knowing how they're testing you. And this is where, that's what this session's all about, right? Giving you sort of insights as to how to get the right answer. At the bottom of the page, beneath Manage Known Networks, click the network you want to manage, click Share to forget the network. So these are, you know, options that you can select. So just giving you the high level. The next one is also about, you know, Windows Firewall Advanced settings. Know what those are, the different types of Wi-Fi networks. We talk about domain versus private versus public networks, and which ones to set in what scenario. If you're talking about an organization, they typically like to make the public profiles, protect the public profiles, but they usually do all the configuration on the domain profiles. And we reach another question. Your company uses programs named My Applications in the C My App directory. You need to open the Windows Firewall with advanced security to allow myapp.exe to communicate on the network you want to use. You want to use NetSH to accomplish this task. Drag the answer on the left to the spot on the right. Some answers may be used more than once. Some may not be used at all. So what this is a, we've listed out on the right left, the possible options that you can select. And you really want to drag them and put them in the right place. So anyone want to take a guess at NetSH, what goes right there next to the firewall? Advanced firewall. Yep, I heard advanced. Then add rule name, my application, the directory. In the action, I wanted to do what?
Allow
the program. See myapps.exe to do what?
Enable,
right. So again, some of it is logic, but once you kind of get the gist of what they're asking, you can basically put that sentence together and ignore everything else. Configure might not be one, you know, and any of the other firewalls not one because it's not the same as advanced firewall. So just little tips in knowing how to put these commands together really help you do well on the exam.
This time, a side note to the exam. So there are also some command PowerShell commands that you have to drag and drop in the right direction in the exam. So that's like another style of multiple choice
options.
Options, yeah.
Yep.
What's the PowerShell version?
The we'll save that for another session. So what's the PowerShell? Okay, supporting data storage. And hey, why is just sit back there? Supporting data security and supporting data storage. This is another section. So we talk about DFS and DFSR. Know the difference between DFSR and DFSN namespaces. Replication is about the data replication, and namespaces are having an actual URL that you can actually go to and access the information. One has actual data in it that's moved from one location to another. The other one is just a URL that's shared shared across a network. A lot of organizations use this, so we ask that you are familiar with it and understanding where RDC or remote differential compression helps out in the transferring of data replication between the different DFS locations. This is just a type of data storage. It may be something you see on the exam as well. So quick question. Yeah, we have a lot of exam questions on this one, so this is kind of helpful. You need to use NetSH command to forget a network. Which of the following is true regarding the NetSH command? Choose all that apply. So how many people think A, it must be typed in elevated Windows PowerShell session is one of those that apply? How about B, it must be typed at a command prompt? How about C, it must be typed at a command prompt with elevated privileges? So NetSH, okay. Mm-hmm. How about D, you must use a parameter WLAN delete profile equals profile name. Anybody? And E, you must use the parameter WLAN remove profile name. Okay, so I kind of see it. So yeah, I think you guys got it. So it's C and E. One is the command prompt with elevated privileges because you want to run the NetSH command. It will prompt you and then you'll basically be in the administrative, be able to change something administratively, and then you want to run the remove command to actually remove a profile name. It requires elevation. Data access protection is another section. We've seen this again. They talk about file shares, the difference between file shares and folder shares, and managing remote access with VPN. We saw this is nothing new. VPN connections are very important. Know the difference between the different VPN protocols. PP2P, LTTP, and SSTP and IKE version 2. I also mentioned authentication protocols as well, PAP versus EAP and CHAP. I've listed them out here because I want you to, you know, when you get a chance, go through, kind of read about it because there's a lot of information around the VPN connections. They expect you to know which one's more secure, which one uses password, which ones require certificates in the authentication protocols.
What kind of certificates?
And what kind of certificates are needed. Mm-hmm. Whether they're talking on two different servers. So this is a section that covers that. And designing for VPN, we talk about the two types of VPN connections. And the more important thing to know about this VPN is knowing that in the Windows 10 console, you have different options to show up for both VPN and broadband tethering. Here we show you just broadband tethering, being able to take a mobile device or some other device and connect it into your Windows 10 to be able to use that network to browse the internet or have access to the web. Mm-hmm. And then the VPN options for designing a remote authentication. You see the drop-down gives you those options to select what sort of network you need. In a business scenario, you're looking for scenarios where you want to provide the most secure solution as opposed to something you're doing in the lab. And typically you want to stick to something like an SS2P connection where you have secure socket tunneling, or deciding on whether you're going to use MSChap or EAP, being supported, EAP being the most secure component. This is an example of VPN reconnect. In other words, if you lose connection, you automatically get reconnected. We know that the auto VPN is something that's fairly new. We're seeing that happen now. I don't know how much of that you'll get tested on, but it's good to know that it actually works, and you can set it up that way. Remote desktop settings are also tested on. Yes. Nothing new. We're going to suggest again that you know each one of these tabs: display, local resources, experience, and advanced. All of them have different settings. If they ask you about it, they're expecting you to sort of just know what that looks like. Rather than me going through each one of these with you personally, it's simple enough to kind of see what's in the remote desktop connection and see what type of questions they might ask. For example, being able to map your local drive or use copy and paste from your remote session to the current session you're on, or save your settings.
Or use some proxy settings in the advanced tab and stuff, yeah.
Yep. Power options come up again. Know your power CFG and how to set your system into standby or hibernate or enable it, or how to even print out your energy report, how much battery you're consuming. This is a good example of that. This shows you available power settings. Everyone has it on their system. Just type in power CFG /?, and you'll get all the commands that you need to test with. This is something you're tested on an exam as well. and the disk management tools.
Yeah, disk part. So now are also some CMLETs available from PowerShell, of course, getDisk. And the old one is a disk part with the answer file, with the /s, and then put in the answer file. So use disk part /?, and you get all the options, what's possible. Use the get help, get disk from the PowerShell CMLET help, also with the examples, and get a little bit familiar with them. Also here the same story as you had in the command prompt translation, the tools to PowerShell, right?
We also see configuring Windows to Go as an option, basically setting up Windows to Go. You need to have some sort of external drive connected, and it'll ask you where you want to put the files for the Windows to Go setting. Make sure you know what those options are. Here's another question. Which of the following is the most secure password-based authentication protocol supported by VPN?
Is it A?
Is it A? Anybody think it's A? EAS, MS Chat, V2?
Okay.
B, PAP?
PAP.
C, MS Chat, V2? D, CHAP.
CHAP.
And E, SPAP, Secure PAP. Not Secure PAP, but nope. It looks like it's A, but it's actually D, CHAP. It uses the password-based authentication, and it's the most secure component of that piece. It doesn't use any certificates. Use the password-based authentication protocol with the VPN client. Okay, remote app. Now, this section actually goes into remote app. The interesting thing is, remote app is actually something that we may not be seeing, but it's still on the exam, and it's something that you're going to be test on. What they're looking to understand is if you understand the difference between on-client access to remote applications versus on-prem.
Oh, the on-premise side is still available, right?
Yes.
The Microsoft just shut down the in-cloud remote app. But there are still some questions about that.
Yes, there are questions on the exam. So know the difference between Azure Remote App, RDS, VDI, and session-based hosting. We do have a slide in here that talks about Remote App, what it looks like, and the ability to basically use it. And we also have being able to deploy apps, which I believe Miracle showed earlier, and having what we call deep-linked applications to things like iOS and Android, where you send the user to the Android or iOS store to access the application. UEV also comes up as part of this section, understanding how to set up user environment or user experience virtualization, which is your old roaming, your new version of what we call roaming profiles. The fact that you can set it up to copy Windows settings and templates, store it, and have that availability from one machine to another. It's the same technology that they use in the sync settings, that allow you to have your data moved from one Windows 10 machine to another. It stores it up in a shared cloud location and where your account is. So they don't say it's UEV, but it has the same technology. And that is something that they ask about when you're thinking about virtualizing user settings. UEV is the one that you want to think about. This shows you that engine and something to keep in mind.
So UEV is now in the Windows 10 16.07 version implemented, but the questions in the test is just about the old UEV with the old commands, not with the new ones.
So this is the old UEV with the old commands.
Yes.
So we put them here so that you know about it, the type of questions they ask, setting it up, how to make sure it's syncing, and all that fun stuff. Question 8 is managing apps. Which of the following lets you store and manage applications on your own network? Anybody want to guess? While also making them available to users on a multiple platform?
D, other?
A, anybody think A?
A.
Lets you store and manage applications on your own network servers while also making them available to users on multiple platform. Okay, so it's A. I'm going to save time because we're running late on time.
Multiple platforms means also on other
Android, iOS. Exactly. So, yeah, the term multi-platform is what you have to think about and the ability to kind of digress. Last section on this exam is managing updates and recovery. We saw Windows file history show up as a component to think about. Make sure you know how to use the file history, the fact that the data has to be placed on a storage somewhere on a separate drive so that when you do the restore, it's available. We also talk about, here's the restore component as well.
From OneDrive?
Yep. We talk about using Windows updates and servicing updates and what that looks like, being able to know the difference between when you're getting an update versus a feature upgrade and a feature update, a servicing update. Terminology's changed a little bit, but for the exam, feature upgrades and servicing updates are considered the terminology that you need to know. Update settings and Windows update policies, we talk about just knowing the difference between what that is, current branch versus current branch for business versus LTSB. Current branch meaning the ones that the end user typically has access to. Current branch for business, you typically delay it by like 4 months, and then the business actually gets it. It's already been tested. It's sort of a ladder. The same version that's tested, that's been run for over 4 months. And then all LTSB are more for like things like kiosk machines, older machines that you don't typically expect to have a lot of changes. And we mentioned this at the very beginning.
Yeah, here also, for the Microsoft change, you can see it's a 4 month and 8 month is a 12 month, but now it's 16 month with the new Windows 10, right? So the question about that is still the old way. So the 12 month cycle, right? So has that in background.
So then the last two or three slides are focused on managing updates, and we kind of showed you where those settings are. So when you do have the slides, just make sure that you're going through what those updates look like, the ability to use different components to get updates. We've listed out a number of them. Know the difference between WSUS, Group Policies, Configuration Manager, and how all of them actually service updates to the end user, and in which scenario you use one versus the other. We mentioned update history, being able to see that in the actual control panel under the add and remove programs. It's still available, and you can see it in the new UI as well, and the service branch comparison.
A side note here, there are also some new templates available for WSUS management or Windows Update client management on a client himself.
Okay, I'm going to skip this one because of time.
Yep.
And so, not new technology.
Not new.
GPOs, you'll get asked about GPOs. We put this in the deck because we want a reference for you to make sure that you're aware of it. The ADK, it tells you about what's all in the tools as well. And being able to use Windows Recovery, the ability to be able to reset and have access to, when you reset your system, being able to either do it through keeping your personal files or cleaning up the machine completely. This is the latest way of managing. It's called reset. It used to be refresh and reset. Now it's just reset this PC, keep my personal files, or remove everything.
Also use the provisioning files to get the company information to the device.
And then last note is just a device and credential guard, right? New features in Windows 10 that both technologies are required. They need UEFI 2.3.1, and they all need these as a requirement to make sure that they're working. They're still alive and functioning in the exam itself. Much of the components are being written into newer terms.
But this is just a side note slide, so there are no questions that I know in the exam. That's just for the new technology. Have a look on them and get familiar with them. That's the future of security about devices. Right?
So our intention was to make sure that we walk through the 7697 exam. Again, you can see there's a lot of content. And we wanted to be able to walk away with as much information as you can. The intention is that these slides will be available for you guys on the Ignite channel so that you can actually pull it down and use it for studying. If you need it earlier there, if you're preparing to take an exam, please let me know and we'll see what we can do to get it for you. And again, just to break down the topics. We've also listed a number of different sessions that are available, particularly for this Ignite, that you can actually go to and prepare you for the exam, most of them dealing with managing devices, and as well as the 7697 exam ref book on the Microsoft Press Store. Again, thank you for staying this long. I really appreciate it. And before anybody leaves, I want to get a selfie. Is that okay? All right. Because I've been trying to get one. You guys get to be in it, and you get to be in it too, bud.
Okay, thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening. Let's do
a coffee,
guys. But don't leave.
Make a selfie. Selfie.
All right, let's get one real quick. Wait, you got to turn it the other way. You guys still there? One, two, don't do this. Three. All right. Again, thanks, guys, for coming.
Thank
you. Really appreciate it.
Have a nice week.